in helping others in some way or other. Many help those they love and have left on earth. If they can get through to people, they're as I can to you. But for those whose relatives, either through ignorance, fear, disbelief, or religious bigotry, do not desire to get into touch with them, there is work to be done by helping less developed spirits on the lower spheres. Do you know, I often bring men home to see you who are not in touch with their own people, to prove to them that some at least on earth realize we are still living. I can't understand the people who say that spirit return is possible. But wrong, because only devils or evil spirits can communicate. Surely God would not reserve this his great comfort and gift, the assurance of continued conscious existence, solely for the wicked? I am living on a third sphere or plane, we call it Summerland, and some people paradise. To turn to more mundane matters, darling, you want to know how I eat? Well, my body absorbs all the nourishment it requires from the atmosphere, like the leaves of trees do. Even the air around the earth contains in different degrees and solutions most of the elements that form our physical bodies there. I don't actually sleep, but I do sometimes feel tired, and then I lie down and rest, and refresh myself by bathing in the lake. Nothing can kill the soul, not even man himself, though sometimes, if before the final separation of body and soul the illness has been very severe, there has been brain disease, or the end has been violent and sudden, the shock to the soul is very great, and it may remain in a state of unconsciousness for many days or weeks, till it is recovered sufficiently to awake in its new conditions. You see, therefore, a suicide, far from escaping trouble, only goes from one form of misery to another. He cannot annihilate himself and pass to nothingness. How do I get about? I walk very often. At other times, if necessary, I generate sufficient power, which I concentrate by effort of will within my body, to take me anywhere with the speed of thought. Our bodies are so light and so strong, it is easy to jump the highest wall with the slightest effort. The atmosphere has not the same resisting power to our bodies as it has to yours. How I shall laugh, Mum, when you come here and I see you jumping 10-foot walls. Not that we do jump them, as it is not necessary, and we are particularly taught never to waste force or energy. When I first came over, I longed for you to be here, but I was told that your earth work was not accomplished, and I must be patient. There are so many wonderful things I want to show you and to tell you about. One reason why we have found it so easy to get into touch with each other is because we are both psychic. Of course, we neither of us realized it before, but I can quite clearly understand and see it now, and I see other things so differently too in the light of all the knowledge I have gained. Music, and flowers, and things I should have thought it rather sentimental to admire before, I thoroughly appreciate now. In the spirit world there is a stronger affinity between the spirit and beautiful things than between any physical connection on the earth plane, perhaps because it is a more perfect expression of God. There are beautiful birds and exquisite flowers, and many pleasures. I go boating and golfing, but one must not take life in any form, so I no longer fish. You want to know about our houses? Well, they are built by bricklayers and designed by architects as they would be on earth. In the spirit world all work is equally honorable, and each man does that for which he is most fitted. If he is best at manual employment, he realizes his limitations and has no foolish desire to appear other than he is, as all work is done under beautiful conditions. All are happy and free. On earth certain forms of labor are looked down upon, because those who perform them are ill-paid and live under distressful conditions. Here all good work is recognized as valuable. It is curious on looking at the world to see how many people they have chosen the wrong vocation. In the spiritual socialism that will be law in my Arcadia on earth someday, both the theoretical and practical men will realize their responsibilities to each other and will live to right wrong. The master will not say, how little, but how much can I afford to pay this man, to make his life agreeable, and not merely bearable. And the man will do his best honorably to give honest and interested service in return as his right and share in the bargain. I have told you before how certain things are made here, just as they are on earth, largely of gases. You see, Vapors and gases from lifeless matter are always rising from the earth. You can smell it in decaying things, such as flowers, wood, leaves, etc. These in disintegrating disperse quite a lot of matter into the air, which is deposited in the different spheres round the earth. The coarser on the lowest sphere, the finer rising to the higher, a sort of chemical action, or a kind of gravitation, acting in a different way to that on earth, attracts each density of gas to its suitable environment, another example of the great law of the universe which we do not yet understand. Out of this deposit, concentrated into solids by chemical action, all substances here are made, such as bricks for the houses, material for clothes, etc. You want to know about clothes? Well, you can wear just what you like here, there are no fashions to follow or appearances to keep up. Though a very mixed array is the consequence, it does not seem incongruous, for here you dress to express yourself and not to impress your neighbors. I dress as I did with you, but some people wear white robes because they think when out of the mortal body it is the correct thing to do. If I chose to wear a tunic and sandals, or beefeaters get up, no one would laugh and jeer, they would realize it made me happy, and that is reason enough. Mummy, dear, I quite understand how difficult all I tell you about my life here is for you to realize. I am quite sure in your place I should never believe it, but it's true all the same. The more one studies science, the more possible it seems to become. After all, the difficulty is in believing in things so real, so strong, so substantial, and yet to most people invisible. Yet, when you come to think of it, on Earth there are many of the most solid things made of gases and elements, which in their pure state are invisible. A large proportion of our physical bodies, rocks, and some of the Earth itself, for instance, are made of oxygen, which is impalpable as well as invisible. Undeveloped people are those who live only through the senses and have not cultivated the intellect nor the spirit. To them what is impalpable seems impossible. Someday we'll write some fairy tales of science together about the wonderful further knowledge to be gained here. It's all so extraordinarily interesting. We might write novel together too, and call it The Growth of a Soul, and trace its evolution through various incarnations. You and I have been through many together, in different connections, relationships, and sexes, that's why we are so particularly in affinity with one another. I'm not going to tell you you were Boadicea, Cleopatra, Helen of Troy, or any other famous or infamous female of past history, as I sometimes hear spirit wags telling other women, for they make fun sometimes at the expense of those on earth if they are vain or gullible. Will you be shocked, Mum, if I tell you what I have recently done? It sounds rather like the Chamber of Horrors at Madame Tussaud's. I went down to the astral plane, searched for and made friends with a murderer. He was a man who some years ago paid the extreme penalty for killing his wife. I did not seek him for curiosity, that would have been unjustifiable, but because I was trying to trace the cause which led to such a tragedy, and to find the kink in the man's character which made the deed to him seem excusable. I found X. A very decent chap, fond of animals and children, a quiet, inoffensive little fellow. He tells me he was driven positively mad by his wife. Contempt and loathing ended in hate of her. She seems to have been an odious woman. He said she was coarse, unfaithful, drank to excess, and nagged without ceasing, till he absolutely became desperate. For about a year after he came over here he had a terrible time, because he was sullen and full of hate and rage. Then he began to calm down and to see, however evil his plight had been, he had no right to take her life. As soon as the desire for improvement came, friends were ready to help him, and he is already much happier, and working among those who come over full of misery and bitterness as he himself did. He never mentioned these unpleasant things about his wife at the trial, as he might have done in order to try and extenuate matters against himself. Poor devil, he was more sinned against than sinning, I think. You do not delay my progress, as was suggested to you, by keeping in touch with me. People on earth will not realize that you cannot summon spirits any more than you can compel men on earth to come and see you if they do not wish to do so. In the spirit world, people choose what is best for their own evolution. If mortals desire the companionship of spirit friends merely for purposes of material gain, it does not of course do either of them much good, but when love is the motive and mutual help the desire, it is good for both, for helping others is the way of progress. There is a wedge now being driven in to open the door between the two worlds of matter and spirit, and I love to feel that I may be a tiny splinter of that wedge. This is an excellent opportunity of letting a little light and hope through which will help mankind, for I have explained to you the creative power of thought. At present the earth is enveloped in what looks like a thick grey mist caused by the thoughts of cruelty, rage, grief, and pain that are continually outpouring. The Christ. I know why you are all thinking especially of me today, darling. It's an anniversary, my birthday into the spirit world, I mean. I am not going to call it the day I was killed. I do truly feel hundreds of years older sometimes. I seem to have learned so much since I came over, and yet at other times I sit at your feet and rest my head against your knee, and it seems as if I were a little boy again, and all these things had never happened. Yes, I have seen Christ once, Mummy, and, remembering how awe-inspiring the occasion was, cannot help wondering how anyone could imagine at death they would go straight to his kingdom, when most of us have done so little to earn that beatitude. I was told I should be allowed to see him, but honestly at the time I did not realize or appreciate the fact. I thought it would probably mean going to a very high church with an elaborate ritual of pomp and ceremony. When the appointed time came, my guides provided me with a plain white robe to wear. You cannot attend the court of an earthly king without suitable garments, and we passed through connecting shafts to the Christ sphere. My general impression was that of brightness, almost dazzling, the air scintillated like diamonds, it almost crackled, it was so full of electricity, my feet had not a very firm grip of the ground. There were bands and processions of people white-robed, all going in one direction. They moved with uplifted faces, singing beautiful music. We joined the rear of one group, and were almost swept along on a tide of intense feeling. We came to a building without any walls. It consisted of a roof, which seemed to be composed of interwoven rays of light of different colors, supported by pillars which looked as if they were made of mother of pearl. There were crowds of people all round, and raised above all others stood one glowing, radiant figure. I knew at once it was Christ, and instinctively fell on my knees, though he is not like any picture I have ever seen. I was so conscious of him that I felt as if he was bending over me. His eyes seemed to penetrate me, and produce a wonderful glow. I felt uplifted in a culminating thrill of ecstasy. He was speaking, but I could not hear the words. As I knelt there, many events of my life passed in review through my mind. I could visualize them as pictures. My memory seemed stored with records, not alone of the life I had just left, but of others in the faraway past, and as the various scenes presented themselves I seemed to realize the different lessons I had learned through these experiences, and to know that all the events of my life had been leading up to this. Of reincarnation. You want to know how it is I now believe in reincarnation, and say that other spirits you find do not? Well, darling, we are still very far from ultimate truth, and people here vary in their opinions and ideas just as they did on Earth. We are still learning, Mum. We have only gone a little further along the road of experience, and have by no means reached the end of the journey. Yes, there is a heaven, but it is a long way off and has yet to be earned. Even our very bodies, which are still fairly material, will have to become more refined before we are fitted for that. I am told by friends here that souls are sometimes reborn, reincarnated, in order to gain further experience, learn more life lessons, or work out past sins and failings. Each earth life leaves its mark on character, and its lessons are forever imprinted on the subconscious mind, which registers everything that has ever happened to the soul from the beginning. This, they say, explains much of the pain and trouble you see on earth. The sufferers are learning lessons which are necessary for their soul's growth, for man was put into the world to develop the spiritual. They may have lived before, and neglected to learn them, or there may be new souls going through these experiences in one or other of the stages of their existence. It is all on the road of their evolution. Families, friends, sections of nations in the revolving cycle of time reincarnate together very often, as they require the same experiences. When you begin to think seriously about the subject and look and study the people about you, you will be able to recognize that some people are old souls and others new. Past experiences, though not consciously remembered, tone down crudities of character. Old souls have a sympathy, a strength, taught of pain and discipline, and are therefore considerate for others. When one knows many of the exceptionally gifted young men who have passed over in this war, one realizes they may have been old souls who gained their experience in the past and returned to Earth for a glorious culmination in this supreme sacrifice. I have often heard people ask why God permits wickedness. If it were impossible for man to sin, he would no longer be a free agent but an automaton, as man is on Earth to learn his lesson and develop his soul. He must have his mettle proved. There would be no good without evil. Contrasts exist and are necessary, just as day and night, wet and fine, heat and cold, pleasure and pain, are only realized and appreciated through their opposites. Old souls have learnt also to keep in touch with and draw from the God force, the actual source of life. Psychically developed people are especially in contact with it. The soul has a separate consciousness. Many people's souls leave their bodies in sleep habitually, or under anesthetics, and travel to various places. Some, on awaking, are able to remember the scenes they have visited, and this memory can be cultivated. So you see, the difference between sleep and death for some people is not very great after all, nor the passing painful nor difficult. It only means on one occasion they leave their bodies to return no more. With reference to the discussion in the paper on it reincarnation, you say some women think it almost a desecration to believe their babies have lived before and been perhaps even harlots, thieves, or other undesirable persons. This sounds as if they presuppose themselves to be new souls. I am told, whatever those babies may have been in previous lives, if they have lived on Earth before, their mothers have earned those particular babies. I mean, souls don't return promiscuously to anybody, in any family. There is a sequence in their lives that necessitates their coming to one particular environment. It is part of the natural law, and works automatically. Their mothers may have owed them something, a debt of love they failed to pay in a previous existence, or a trust they betrayed. If the baby had been a harlot in the past, perhaps the mother in those days was the lover who first betrayed her, or even a vain, cruel, careless, or neglectful mother before, who failed in her duty to her child, and was the cause of her downfall. Perhaps that child or another is sent to her that she may make good. It may be her opportunity. People should always do a kindness when they can, even if it is not appreciated or acknowledged, for it may be a chance of repaying a debt. Souls do not come in the same relationship to each other every time, and not even as the same sex sometimes. A well-developed soul is one that has functioned in both sexes, and so has gained experience. To look at it another way, it is also equally open to every woman to believe, or hope, if she likes, that she and her baby did such good work when they were in the world before, that they have come back to continue it, for this happens too sometimes. Here we are continually taught that the highest service is to help one another, and this is the best way for some people to do it. I promised I would tell you all I had learnt of our previous lives together, yours and mine. It is not very much. My guides showed me a number of pictures in a series of visions illustrating these lives. There must have been many more than I know anything of, for in the first we were versed in many of the occult mysteries and rites of ancient Egypt. I saw that country thousands of years ago. There were wonderful buildings with huge pillars, and the dazzling sunshine and heat of the east. We were brother and sister, I was told, and were attached to the court of the Pharaoh, a sort of lady and gentleman in waiting. We also had a great deal to do with the temple, and the priests, and religious services. It was probably in this connection we were at the court. I know we spent much time walking in the temple processions, and I saw you a tall woman, with a good figure and an upright carriage, in a purple robe and overdress trimmed with gold, and a sort of cloak of some skin falling at your back, your forehead bound low down with a broad fillet of gold with hieroglyphics on it. You wore bracelets of gold and other ornaments in the way of earrings and necklaces. You looked jolly fine, Mum. I used to wear on these occasions a sort of tunic trimmed with gold, and sandals laced up to the knee with the same precious metal. I was quite pleased with my appearance, till I discovered that I also wore an enormous wig that stuck out a foot round my head in every direction. It amused me very much. I must have looked a perfect sight. But if that was the fashion at the time, I have no doubt I was very pleased with the effect then. I don't know what happened, or our subsequent history, on that occasion. In the next scene we were walking along a dusty eastern road in Palestine. The country on either side looked sun-baked, and rough, and bare, with a few thorny bushes growing here and there. This time you were a young matron about 22, and were carrying your baby. You were wearing a blue robe embroidered round the edge, and a kind of veil over your head. You had the face of a Madonna. You were the wife of a notary, a man known for his goodness and benevolence. I was about 19, a girl too, your bosom friend, and in the scene I describe was walking beside you with my arm round your waist. We were Christians, and it was in the early days of Christianity. That time I was shown the end of the life story. Some terrible plague, or epidemic, broke out in Jerusalem, and you and I used to go among the sick poor carrying food and medicine. Later, I saw you in a comatose condition at the point of dissolution, while I knelt beside you, stricken too, and praying that death should not divide us. What happened to your husband and the baby I don't know. The next scene was, I should imagine, somewhere in the Near East, possibly in the Balkans. This time we were both young men, brothers. We wore picturesque garments, rather like a musical comedy, and seemed to be leaders of a band of fighters, and we appeared to enjoy our rough, wild life thoroughly. What happened to us later I don't know. Yes. It does seem as if we had not advanced much that time. Perhaps we required to be more strenuous, and so were given the opportunity. Unity of cultivating what is commonly called grit. There are new souls, too, always coming into the world, and I am told much of the sin in it is due to ignorance and inexperience, so, too, is the narrow-mindedness. When anyone is sure they know everything, or think they understand the limitations of nature, or are bigoted in religious matters, you can believe it is that they have very little soul experience, for old souls learn the tremendous power of God, and realize how infinitesimal is man. I have never seen a spirit yet who has seen God, and yet here you know you live because you are just a particle from the divine. You say it hurt you to hear that poor woman who spoke through the other medium the other day. She seemed so terribly unhappy and uncomfortable. Well, poor woman, she was so unready to pass out of the world. She was killed suddenly through an accident while in perfect health. She was a very worldly woman, and could not believe it when she came to herself and found she had left her mortal body. She had no real belief in life after death, and felt she was in a dream and a very unhappy one, for, alas for herself, she had in her life on earth laughed her husband out of all belief in it too, and she realized the difficulty she would have in undoing this mistake. As you make the conditions of your own life after death by your state of spiritual development, you can imagine some people, whose spiritual faculties have dwindled till they have become atrophied, almost a negligible quantity, in fact comma can see no beauty here, in fact, they live under unpleasant conditions. Some people are earthbound. All their interests are there, and they return for that contact with men in the old conditions they crave. I know it is difficult to understand why discarnate souls should still hanker after material and sometimes gross pleasures. It is because while on earth their senses ruled them, and stamped and coarsened the soul, instead of the spirit refining and purifying the body. As I have already told you, for some time after people come here they continue to feel as if they were still in a mortal body. You can realize this in a small way from what is, alas, a common occurrence nowadays. Any soldier who has had the misfortune to lose a limb will tell you he can feel pain, discomfort, or irritation in it for days after it has been amputated. And this way spirits continue for some time after they have left them to feel their bodies after death, and you know from experience now that the first time a spirit returns through a medium, the death condition is generally reproduced or indicated. Guides, inspiration, and God. You say you have heard so much of spirit guides to people on earth, and want to know who appoints these, and why. Guardian angels, I suppose they used to be called. Well, no one appoints them, they are spirit friends attracted by something in the individual which appeals to them, and they try to influence and help those in whom they take an interest. They may be earth friends or relatives who, having passed on, still keep the bond of affection that held them while here, though they are often strangers attracted by mutual interests, who try literally to inspire those on earth. This does not mean in religious matters only, it applies to art, science, engineering, medicine, or any other subject. Can't you imagine a musician here, reveling in beautiful harmonies, trying to instill into the mind of an earthly musician some of the glorious sound which gives him such joy, and which he knows will benefit and uplift those still in the bonds of the flesh? Or an artist surrounded by this exquisite beauty trying to inspire the mind of a friend, so that he may see with truer, clearer vision the hidden wonders that surround him? Or a man of science or an engineer trying to impress the mind of a friend on earth with a new discovery or invention? These things are being done every day, and the flashes of genius which illumine the world occasionally are the result of the influence of spirit minds on the minds of those still in the world. When men realize it is possible to get help from these sources, they will do great things, for to those who have passed on, the sources of information, though not limitless, are vast in comparison with those on earth. The secrets of Atlantis and ancient Egypt are obtainable if they care to work to learn them. I have told you here, too, like attracts like. If a human being is spiritually and intellectually undeveloped, and lives only in the senses, the spirit friends he attracts are of a very undesirable order. They are the souls of those who had no wish to live anything but a life of animal gratification, and still hang about the world and their old haunts continually, trying to get a kind of second-hand indirect pleasure from the doings of the people who now follow in their footsteps. Having told you something of guides, I will tell you now of some charming elementals, and I'll give you an epigram, Mum. Everything in animal life and the flower and vegetable kingdom in its highest development takes a certain resemblance to humanity, because the human entity is the highest expression of life demonstrating in a physical way on the earth plane. For instance, you know when a dog or horse is loved and cared for by anyone, it is said the animal becomes almost human in its intelligence. There are nature thought forms, some of which are made by the emanations, the excess life, as it were, from the flowers. These are the so-called fairies, which are not, as we supposed when we outgrew childhood, merely a charming figment of imagination, but actually exist and were seen in the beginning by those who lived in touch with nature and had unspoiled eyes to see the wonders and beauties of God's world. These creatures have intelligence without being intellectual, and are almost human in form. You want to know why they take this form? Well, all life must take some form when it emanates, and why not this? After all, there is no resemblance between the tiny seed you sow in the ground and the beautiful flower that springs from it eventually. The thought forms of flowers are the spirit side of their life on the physical plane, and they are stronger than human thought forms, for the life that goes to them is a steady continuous stream, while that supplied by human thought varies and fluctuates. The flowers here have no spirit forms, for they are themselves spirits. I know you sometimes find it very difficult to follow my explanations, and I find it difficult to explain, for our experiences are limited, and language is limited and is inadequate to express spiritual things. It is like trying to explain the glories of a splendid sunset to a man who was born blind. After all, we can only judge things by past impressions, and when these are lacking we can only believe, if we are willing to accept them, through faith the evidence of things unseen. You want to know what I feel about religion now, and if my ideas on reincarnation have changed my ideas of Christ? Well, Darling, I will answer the last question first. I believe that Christ is a great and wonderful personality, a great spirit in the form of a man, as near as possible to God, because the God force plays so strongly in and through him, a fit instrument and receiver of that power. There was a specific reason why Christ was sent. God specially directed him, the consciousness of God within him was very acute,